Hi, this is filmmaker BJ Colangelo, and you're listening to The Default Setting with Jess Falstick and Gigi Chick, presented by Above Below Entertainment.
Welcome to The Default Setting. We find out what makes you tick because we have ways of making you talk. I'm your host, Jess Falstick.
And I'm co-host Gigi Chick.
And this week, our guest is comedian and just generally fun, friendly, likable guy, Mr. John Armstrong.
Hello, podcast.
How are you?
I'm well. Hello. Just happy to be here. I got a little turned around coming here just because I got scared by this neighborhood.
Didn't we all?
Well, and then I forgot, so...
We all barely made it here alive.
It's a miracle, actually, that all three of us are here right now.
Milky Way Recording Studio is actually based out of Pete's house, and I forget to tell people that it's a house every time. So almost every single one of my podcast guests actually show up thinking it's going to be like a studio, and I forgot to tell John this, and John's like, oh, my white friends, they need to specify if it's a house.
I don't want to be weird, but
what structure?
Yes, I cannot knock on random doors.
I would never do that.
John is African American. For those of you at home who don't know him,
yes.
And it was funny.
I'm not saying my words too much.
I see.
Did he say salmon instead of salmon?
Well, that's it. Like, John pulls up outside, and I did have that moment. I'm like, oh, he probably can't just wander up to a window
and look in
and be like, is this where I'm supposed to be? Well, I think you and I could, Gigi, a little more than John probably could.
I mean, like...
You gotta remember, Trayvon Martin got killed by his all neighborhood watch guy.
Right, and he was just like a 16-year-old kid eating Skittles. Yeah,
I don't even live here. I don't even have that excuse. but we almost got murdered
before you tonight, so, you know.
Yeah, oh my God. Somehow later we will work this into the conversation of talking about Gigi and I's nightmare Uber ride that we had.
Oh my God.
And like,
I still can't believe it.
We come in,
honestly.
Poor Pete's just sitting here eating, and we're like, I almost got murdered by it. He's like, what in the hell?
He's watching an amazing Netflix series, and we're just like, come here, sorry.
Hysterical women.
Well, you know what's messed up? That Uber driver's probably at home right now stressing over his Uber rating that you all are giving him.
Oh, he's at the airport right now. we'll tell you about that later. Or that random strip club.
Yeah. Did you say he gave you a strip club address instead of this one?
Yeah. All right. So let's just tell a story. Real quick, before we do that, so John's default setting is you're a pragmatist.
I try to be. I try to see the world for what it is, not for what I want it to be. You know what I mean?
Because I personally think I admire that quality the most, because it's the one that I've sort of lacked the most throughout my life. I've always been far more emotional and idealistic. So I need to know, is that something that has been...
Constant? No.
Constant? The pragmatism? Okay. Now, when was the first time you realized that you were a pragmatist?
I don't know. I mean... It's no one instance where you get it, but I will say, without me crying on this microphone.
It's like Barbara so Walters early. Up in here. Yeah.
This is 2020.
Oh my God, I'm going to spit my LaCroix across the room.
You all
that was actually a really good Barbara Walters.
Yes,
Holy shit, that was great.
It was freakishly good.
No big deal.
I'm Hugh Downs. Hugh Downs syndrome. I don't think it's one particular time. I think through a series of just upsets through life, you start to realize you never really get your way. So you start seeing the world for what it is. And like, I don't know, I got that whole not growing up with a father thing. And then I've been through some trouble when I was younger. I've lost some friends. And then, you know... Once again, I'm black, so everything don't exactly work out. Yeah. So, and I'm not very religious either. So I kind of look at the world through what it is, not what I wish
dogmatic.
It was. Yes, yes. And the other thing too is like I mean, don't get me wrong. Like you say, you're emotional and stuff. Like, trust me, I wear my emotions on my sleeve.
Okay.
I don't know if you saw me run out of the Cleveland Comedy Festival and I lost.
Oh, that's what that was about? I really didn't think it was an emotional. Yeah, you're so stoic, though. That's the thing. No, at least I don't know you that well. So for me, it was like, he had shit to do. Like,
I was like a kid with diarrhea. I was like, hold it in. You don't want this to go down around the public. And I ran
out
of
there. That makes me feel better.
Yeah, yeah. So
know that there's like a big, strong dude that is actually just as upset about that as I was. Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So I couldn't point to a particular time, but I think it's late teens probably where it started to just evolve. And after a while, I'm just like, you know what? I got to kind of navigate this life thing a little different because the whole praying ain't doing nothing. The wishing ain't doing nothing. And then, too, like you see a lot of fucked up shit. Can we cuss?
Oh, yeah. Okay. We were chanting labes.
But this is 2020.
This is 2020.
Barbara, is it okay if I swear?
But of course.
No, but it's after you see so much fucked up shit. And then after I lost my the rest of the little bit of religion that I had, I was like, you just learn to walk the road a different way, even from me being scared to knock on the door here.
So your family, it sounds like, brought you up when you were very young religious?
Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Baptist, like every other fucking... one of my newest bits I've been doing is how black people love Jesus a little too much. I think we have the worst case of Stockholm Syndrome ever. And I'm trying to lead us away from that shit. Religion has done so much, like, just... I get it. And if you guys are religious, I'm not shitting on
you.
No. But it's just the thing. And I get some of the stories and stuff and all that, but the whole, like, I never forget a friend of mine, he was telling me the story. It was like, Black History Fact, it's Black History Month. Yay. He was telling me, you know, they didn't let slaves read. If you read, you die, but they did let you read the Bible. That's when I was like, indoctrination. Wow. And that was the beginning of the cynicism and just the will. You know, we're comics, so you look at the world, you see anomalies, you see shit that other people don't see.
You have to.
You see patterns that other people don't see. You just, if anything, being a comic is just, you just notice shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everybody else is in a room, and like, I describe it as like that first day of school. You ever notice, like, at least for me, like, a lot of first days of school, it seems like everyone knows each other,
mm-hmm.
but you don't, and you're just standing there like,
you're the only one.
Yeah, and you're noticing every weird thing, and that was just my life, and it didn't make sense until comedy, so.
That's awesome.
Word.
So, like... What you said it happened around in your teens.
Late teens.
What was that? Was there a moment specifically?
I couldn't give you a specific moment. One, I'll tell you, a good friend of mine got murdered. And I was used to people dying where I grew up at, but like it was always like 6 degrees or something. So you knew of people who died all the time, but when it was like my good friend, it was like, and we hadn't seen each other in a while, and we had distanced ourselves from each other, so that whole no closure thing, and you know what I mean? Yeah, so it was a lot of that, and then it was just, it's like, you know what death is, but you don't know what it is until it happens. That whole, wow, I'm literally never going to see this, for like, this entity is a rotting piece of flesh right now.
Right.
It's fucked my mind.
Right,
up, you know what I mean?
Because then it becomes no longer a person and just an organism and all the shit that kind of goes along with that.
It's like, just this decaying thing. So after that, I just started realizing that there's a series of tornadoes out there that you can get hit with any time. And on the flip side of that, though, glass half full, it's a lot of freakishly good shit that can happen, too. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But it's the whole... When people do the whole, like, God had a plan for me, or I knew this was going to happen, or my horoscope said... Fuck that.
Yeah.
I mean, there may... I don't want to be 100% with it. It may be a degree of truth to some of that, but I don't know.
So you're very much against the idea, like, that fate is out of our hands sort of thing, or fate's out of our control, if there's anything else?
Yeah, for the most part, but I try to always leave a good 5 to 10% of I don't know. Okay. Because there still is a lot of there is a little serendipity to shit that happens, you know, when shit comes together, like, what the fuck? And it's really weird,
right.
You know.
So, for sure.
And so I do get how some people get into, like, oh, my angel or my whatever the fuck. It's just I've heard enough microwave baby stories that I can't get on board with.
I don't think I even know what that is, and I don't know if I want to know what that
is. Well, not a lot, but it was like, you know, it's like the one of those wives' tales. It's the razor blade and the apple story at Halloween. Okay. I remember hearing back in the 90s, you know, with this crack mom put her child in the microwave. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those old wives' tales. But yeah.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
So yeah,
the world is shit.
I feel like that's like a really good and logical perspective to have on life, though. I don't think a lot of people can actually be like that diverse in their way of thinking. Like, you have,
they're very binary.
You kind of, like, at least how it seems, you don't really want to hold yourself to a particular way of thinking about anything. You kind of just face life as it's happening, exactly what you're seeing, and kind of just leave room for like the maybe factor.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Like, you can't explain everything.
Exactly, because part of it too is, I mean, it's ego and it's self-preservation. I mean, I'm not going to sit here like I'm some virtuous person. Part of it is like the shit that men do in relationships, how we hold back because you don't want to get kicked in the dick, you know what I mean? So part of it is like you not exactly giving yourself too much to too many situations because you're trying to fill out how is this going to go. You know what I mean?
That makes sense.
Yeah. So yeah.
I was going to say that was probably the biggest drive behind me becoming more pragmatic as a person was just having been emotionally like clobbered so much that when you just start like when you just only start looking 2 feet in front of you and you stop worrying about what everybody else is doing and you focus on the now and focus on what needs to be done. You really do. And there are times where I think about myself and how different I am just even as like 5 years compared to 5 years ago. And sometimes I'm like, am I a cold, callous person? Cause I'm so much more, I guess I've made myself so much more aloof or unavailable emotionally than I used to be. That even just like the slight I think I'm out that I've probably shifted makes me feel like I'm some kind of like robotic cunt that just can't like think. Or
you could sell that.
They do. Robotic, I'm sure cunts. They do.
They do.
Just find. Just go to Ray Hyclack's Facebook page, oh, and he'll usually shit. Have some kind of technological sex update.
I read like such a messed up article. This is one of our tangents, but there was like some type of sex robot. And it basically, there was like a convention. It was a female.
Okay.
So there, who would use a male? I mean, like, I know, I'm eight, really.
I love the luxury that women have. I can fuck a living thing whenever I want to. Who needs a robot?
Anybody?
Men do.
Anybody who fucks men has like free reign.
The men
like,
at this convention in, I don't know, like, I feel like it was Japan or something. And
of course,
they actually
it was Japan.
Broke it. They broke it.
They broke the sex bot?
Yes.
At the sex bot convention?
Yes.
Wait, was it a sex bot convention or just a bot convention?
I think it was a sex bot convention, but there was like a full, like very realistic, and they literally defiled it. Like they broke it, and the engineers were like, we did not
Imagineers.
I mean, I think it was designed to be defiled, to be fair.
Clearly not.
No, wait,
I mean,
were there multiple people using just like, this one robot? Was it one robot?
Yeah, it was just on display.
Oh, it was on display. I messed that part because I was smoking weed.
I mean, like, yeah.
Don't take that so little dick stereotype.
See, I don't think after I could tell there were like leather creases around like the bajiba jabber, like I would probably not. At that point, I'm like, oh, no, clearly someone's been in this. I'm not going to, like, take my...
Can you imagine getting this STD from a robot? Because it's clearly all the guys...
I bet it's got, like, automatic sterilization, though. That's probably the thing. Like, it's probably
like a
got,
dishwasher.
Like, Purell.
It's just
like instead of lube, it's just Purell that it squirts out.
Let's hope it's not Purell. The Purell has alcohol in it.
Yeah, I know. Yes, but anyways. Then you would at least be STD-free.
Yeah.
So you said that it started in your teens, and it just you would say definitely grown.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll give you a couple markers. Okay, so my friend dying, that was one.
Right.
And then I remember I was talking about earlier growing up in Cleveland. I grew up on the east side in the shittier parts that everybody drives fast through.
if they drive through it all.
Oh, yeah. And then I moved to a rural area for 2 years, and then I came back. And that's when I learned that whole, you ever hear that? Well, yeah, you have that saying, you can never go home. And that's when I learned that when I can't, cause all I wanted to do was come back. I was in this very rural area. I was by myself and it was just lonely because you were already a teenager. It sucks being a teenager. And then, so you just want to get back to your friends and everything else. Well, I come back. a lot of my friends are, like I said, dead or in jail. And there was everything was different, and nothing was never the same after that. So that shaped it. And then I think when I was 22, I had my first child, my son. And 2.5 years later, he got diagnosed as autistic. And then the world was over for a while. And then I was just like, it's just that, like, I don't, okay, this is my tangent. But, I started to really identify with, like, just different people. And I don't want to, like, you know, play, you know, misery, you know, measurement here. But, like, people who've gotten either cancer or this or that. But you just realize that there's just certain shit that just happens that you have no control over. And that really fucked me up with my son, because it was like the whole, this is my first child. I wasn't even ready anyway. So I was like, is this because I wasn't ready? And I was all, I don't want a kid. And then it was like, because you go through all that when you're young and you're having a kid. You don't have any money. I was still with his mom, but our relationship was a fucking early 20s relationship, you know? Yeah. Wow. So after all of... after all that, and just seeing him having to go through that, this life that I brought into the world, I was like, okay, well, there is no justice. Cover your neck. So that's where I think that calcified all of that shit.
Okay.
So after that, it was just my walls went up. And but don't get me wrong, I've always been like this lighthearted person, and comedy and humor has always helped me through all that. But there's always this other side that was just there. Like, even my girlfriend that I'm with now, we've been together for over 6.5 years now. And I was with my kid's mom for years. I'm like a serial dater or whatever.
Serial monogamous,
yeah. Well, now I'm a serial monogamous. But you get what I'm saying. Uh-huh. But we were, I was telling her, my girlfriend now, when we first got together, I was like, when are you going to be crazy? I just kept waiting for the other shoe to drop. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like you said, like, as you've gotten older, Jess, and certain things, even though you can be emotional or sensitive, which I can totally identify with, there is a certain amount of that self-preservation that comes up. And it just lends to that, once again, pragmatism. So when I walk into certain situations, you're just constantly sizing things up, and you're like Vegas. You're playing the numbers all the time. What are the odds? How is this going to turn out? And even if even if the odds are big on one end, you still got to kind of, you know, there's a, you know, I'll put $90 on there, but I'm still putting $2 on the Browns, because you never know. You know what I mean? It's that you never know thing.
But that's sort of, it's weird how that blends, because on one hand, pragmatism, I was going to ask you what you kind of thought the difference between, like, your versions of pragmatism versus pessimism is. But then you also start talking about, like, if you think anything can happen, it blends into, like, optimism. You know what I mean? It's weird how that sort of...
Right. That's what I mean. Like, it's a million tornadoes out there, but there's some weird, like, good luck things out there. We all know some asshole who has a great job, who's an idiot, or we know somebody who's with a great guy or girl who doesn't deserve them, or, you know what I mean? And I don't mean to be like that. I'm being very judgmental. Yeah, yeah. But... that, like, from the outside looking in, there are human beings like our president. Like, they're just people like, how the fuck?
Just for one example.
How the fuck did you get here?
Right. Like,
you know what I mean? So, it lends itself to, like, hey, okay, there's possibility. Hence, you know, us doing comedy. Like, we're rolling the dice here with this shit, but I'm like, fuck it. I mean,
what else you got?
Yeah. I mean, like if being up high at night watching Comedy Central, like, I'm at least as funny as half these people.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's when the positive of it, like, I can get hit with the what is that at the end of the rainbow? The pot of gold. You know what I mean? Instead of the tornado. So
So I guess, kind of like scaling back on that, so once you had a kid, you just sort of said, like, well, shit, I'm just gonna allow for the idea that anything can happen, that it can be the worst possible thing. Is that kind of, that was what your takeaway you were saying was from?
Yeah, but once again, I got to reiterate, it wasn't a 100% light bulb. It was like a seed that planted, you know, like when they show those time lapse of a plant coming through the soil, and they can show it going quickly, but it was a process. So I can tell you when it broke through, and then you're like, okay, but it's still evolving now. You know what I mean? Because I'll go in one direction where I'll be super cynical, like you say, that how much of the pragmatism is cynicism, right. and you go in that direction. But then I'll go in the other direction to where, in some ways, if somebody does something shitty, I'll try to approach it in more of an objective way, like,
yeah.
like maybe this isn't what we're thinking it is. Yeah. Maybe, you know what I mean?
That
maybe
I it's love. Not as bad. And that, yeah. that has been a huge personal goal of mine as becoming a pragmatist is... And that's one of my biggest things lately with all the like tumult in social media and politics and, you know, just social stuff in general is the idea that people so quickly jump to one side or the other. Well, this person must be this or this person must right. be that. And there's no in between. And being a pragmatist requires using just straight up pretty much logic and being able to keep emotion completely out of the entire equation.
Which is hard to do.
Which is hard to do for so many people. But when yeah. you're more pragmatic, that's the thing I've really sort of tried my hardest to work on is say like, well, maybe it's neither and maybe we should just take everything. I mean, it's easy to yeah. throw things into bins, but also like we're never going to get anywhere doing it.
It should
that
just
way.
Be like a constant reassessing.
Yeah. Of yeah.
your surroundings.
That's perfect way
you
to put
should
it.
Be
yeah.
able to
reassessing.
Yeah. Like evolve and adapt to your surroundings, including people. It shouldn't be some like fixed mark that we're trying to get to or
completely
a specific,
agree.
You know, status or group, you know. I,
yeah.
I try
well,
to
a lot of this shit like cuts though, you know what I mean? Because oh, like, yeah. We are emotional, we are tribal, we do like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So some shit that you do starts to be a little counterintuitive, but you still have to at least have your mind be able to go in that space. Because
yeah.
if you don't, then you're just, I don't know. One of the things I've been going through with a good friend of mine is they're having a hard time of it, like, as all of us are with our careers, and it's hard. And I was telling them, I'm like, you're like a ship without a rudder. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And until you get that rudder, that purpose, and even after that, it's still fucked. But until you get that, you're just kind of floating around, and you don't know what's
yeah.
You'll
at least be able to have the option of steering one way or the
right.
other,
right? Or at least
right now you don't
at least
have,
assessing yeah. the situation and okay, what are we dealing with instead of yeah. So
for sure,
yeah.
Word.
I love how Josh just like ends every sentence with like. Word.
Sorry.
Drop the mic.
No, I do the same kind of thing, and I just realized. See, comedians notice things. Comedians notice things, and then they immediately call them out. Which
yes.
You develop a very thick skin, and it's also kind of fun. I did my first roast battle the other night.
Nice.
I didn't know,
oh, I saw that.
Yeah, I didn't
yeah,
know how
I
was gonna go, but I was actually
that,
like,
yeah.
I want to
so
do this always and
it.
Forever, like from here on out.
I'm so scared of that. Jeff Davis, shout out to him. He was giving me a heads up on it, and he was like, "Hey, if you ever want to do."
Oh, the tomato one
yeah,
that he has?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was just like we were saying with the emotions on your sleeve. Man, like I've seen those roasts on Comedy Central. And like
they're so funny
they're
though,
so,
but I don't
yeah.
think I could do it.
Oh man. And we used to do that like all the yo mama jokes, yo mama
yeah.
this, yo mama that. And like I take shit personal. it's and I don't
you
mean
can't forget
to.
About it
I
after the
I
fact.
Can't
You're just like,
I can't unhear shit.
I
can't unhear shit.
I will say there were two really main digs at me because the thing is I was like, what are they going to make fun of? I mean, come on, like my hair, which of course they did. And then I was like, what else are they going to make fun of? And like Jeremy Shear said something about my eyebrows. And I was like, for the rest of the week now, I'm just like, fuck my eyebrows. What the fuck is wrong with my eyebrows? And now I like stare in the mirror and
I'm
like,
saying.
No, really, what the hell's wrong with my eyebrows?
That's what
and like,
I'm
it's probably nothing, but he's in my fucking head now. And now I'm like freaked out about
what
my
did
eyebrows.
They say?
He literally was just like, Jess Falstick has two cats, which was the other thing I actually was gonna guess, like, because it was like my hair and my cats are like the things that are easy targets. And he's like, and he went like a direction I didn't even expect. Like, Jess Falstick has two cats. That's because she needs at least two creatures in her life who don't think she has really terrible eyebrows. And I was like, I don't even know what this means.
Oh,
but
what?
I'm so freaked out right now. I was like, oh God.
Yeah, see, that
is look
true.
Me up
I can't.
Online and tell me if I have horrible eyebrows or if this is, because I think he literally, I feel like he just had like, a map of
like
human anatomy God. And spun it
yeah,
and landed on a
like,
feature
yeah.
and was like, I'm going to tell her she has horrible this.
Yeah.
And then she's going to freak the fuck out for
like
the
like
next 2 weeks.
He could have said earlobes and
yes!
you'd be freaking out
like,
about
oh my
earlobes.
God, my ears.
Yeah,
my
I would
ears
be screwed
weird.
Because like my eyebrows are so whack. They're
but
so
they
uneven.
Normal.
They're like,
I know, but that's
yeah,
the thing.
They look normal.
They look normal
but
to us. But that's your thing. Your insecurity.
Yeah.
I mean, if I do that, but they're like in high school, this one girl was like, did you know that your eyebrows are different levels? And I was like, no, I didn't. Douchebag. Yes, I knew.
Yeah. The one eye's bigger, one boob bigger, yeah. one bald. Like,
One leg's longer than the other.
Yeah, it's just call me flopsy opsy, okay?
So this is a perfect example of what we're talking about. But like so John and I are both saying, like, we're comedians, so you have to have a thick skin and understand, like, this is just how people are and sometimes they're assholes. But then you get into something like a roast battle where it's very personal.
Yes.
And then the emotions take over and you're like, I can't just be like, oh, ha ha, what a fine joke is that. Like, you have those insecurities.
Well, that's the thing. It's like a gut punch, you know what I mean? Because it's like, okay, we're here, and like, if you're face to face with somebody and you're ready for a duel and you got all your arsenal, and then somebody bam, like, hits you in the gut, you're just gasping for air, like, what? I can't believe what? How could you? And your whole script goes out, like, you don't have. So I don't know if I'm ready for that shit. It'll be 10 years later, we could all be in Hollywood somewhere. I'm like, I know. Motherfucker said my feet look stupid.
Well, the thing is, like roasts, what's hilarious is that roasts are meant to be vicious. Like, because roasts, the thing we've said time and time again on here is, like, it's like the Wild West as far as comedy, because there literally isn't anything you're not allowed to say. Like, so I've heard people say things about wanting to fuck each other's kids, and their kids are like 8 or 10 years old.
Oh,
and it's
my
like,
God.
And now granted, no one's like, I mean, that reflects poorly on that individual, but at the same time, they're not shunned from the community for saying it, because it's all within the rules and the context of there are no rules.
That is so scary.
And so to me, it's just funny how, like, I think it is a true test of your ability to, like, and like I said, I'm not mad at anybody for anything that was said, but now I'm, like, seriously freaked out about my fucking eyebrows, and I shouldn't be that freaked out about it.
Now, hearing me not want to do it is making me want to do it, because this is the stand-up thing that happens. I'm nowhere near being a veteran in this.
He's barely really fucking good, though.
Whatever. I'm barely creeping on 2 years, but...
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Okay, so wait.
2 years in April.
Me too. Okay, so this, now I feel kind of like bad about my progress. So the first time I ever saw John ever, you were winning the amateur competition at Funny Stop. That was the first time I ever saw you. And I was like, holy shit. Because they did it by applause.
Yeah.
And
you were there?
And I applauded for you and Jasmine the loudest. Yeah, you and Jasmine came in we first and second, because you were the, like, by far and away the best comedians there. And so when I saw him, I was like, oh, shit, he's been doing this, like, at least 3 to 5 years. No. And now he's been doing the exact same amount.
No, it was, that was in July.
I started in June.
A few months in, and
it
was like,
that's impressive.
It was insane.
Well, the way I look at it is, like, there's a lot of luck with this. But the other part I look at it is, I'm a big rap fan.
Okay.
And I'm a big Jay-Z fan, and I remember, like, a lot of people say, like, they love his first album, Reasonable Doubt, and I remember he was in an interview, and they were asking, how was your first album so good? And he was like, I think a lot of people's first album is so great, and sometimes their best, because your whole life you've been writing it to that point. And I think that lent itself to my comedy, because I started so late. I started when I was 36, almost 37. So it was like, my whole life, it was just, I have just a bunch of shit and stories, like, oh man, this happened back in 95.
Let me tell you about this. Something you and I have in common is I just turned 36, and you said you're 38 now?
Yeah.
And so we both, Gigi, look like we're probably 22, 23. Yeah, we're, at least we're John
holding,
does.
We're like,
we,
good.
Like,
no,
you're
10. Like,
we
look
12. It's bad.
Well, but it's just funny, because then I tell, like, stories about, like, yeah, back in 95, and people are like, what, were you 3? And I was like, oh,
yeah. Yeah, when I tell people my son's 16, they're like, when did you have him when you were 12? Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, I guess that's not out of the realm of possibility.
I mean, biologically, probably.
Yeah, my socially awkward ass, I didn't lose my virginity till I was 17.
I'm
like
18.
It was a week before my 18th birthday, exactly to the day. I remember it. And because in my mind, I was like, I don't want to be 18-year-old virgin. And like... And
the
I always
final
joke
countdown.
Too, like, plus, like, in black fucking years, like, my friends, like, everybody who
in
grew
black
up.
Black fucking years. Yeah. Like, that's how I like that, black
thing.
Fucking years.
Yeah, it's like dog years and black fucking years. Like, like, my friends were fucking when they were like 14, 15, 16, you know what I mean?
Mine were too.
Yeah.
Because I grew up in the country, so.
Yeah, but it was like. I was awkward as a kid, and I had a late growth spurt, and I was like. Yeah, I was just not the dude. Like, I was not the one that they were looking at. And even if they were, I was so fucking scared. Oh god. Oh man. I'm working on a bit now about the, like, losing virginity, because it was like one of the most mortifying.
The actual experience itself.
Oh God, it was so bad.
Oh no,
mine. It was epically bad.
Mine was just horribly like cliche. Like we had candles.
Oh God, that's not cliche.
And I made him play Stabbing Westward, which
oh, God.
I don't think anyone's ever lost their virginity to Stabbing Westward except me, maybe.
You know what song came on right before penetration? It was Coolio's Gangsta's Paradise.
Oh.
Cleveland, okay.
Starts with a Bible verse or sort of a.
As I walk through the valley of the shadow of death,
I take a look at my life and realize there's nothing left.
There you go. So back in the day, before it was 107.9, like the black station in Cleveland was 93.1. Mm-hmm. So they would have like For Lovers Only come on at night. It was all R&B music. So we got that on and it was like all these R&B songs. And I
Luther
think it was
Vandross.
Right. And I think it was either so late or it was not a weekday or something, but it started switching back into hip hop. So and I'm so like green. It's like when you're so green on stage that you don't know how to handle a transition, so you stay in your set.
Yep.
I stayed in my set, so I'm just gonna keep sucking these titties. And Coolio's in the background.
We've been fanning and most our lives.
I did not know how to handle it. It was insane.
Oh,
but yeah,
and
that was the best part of it. It got worse, but.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah,
it was,
no, wow. Mine was just not that. I wish. I mean, because the thing is, mine too, like, I was. Okay, God, this is a perfect relation to what we're talking about today. I was so, like, mushy gushy. Like, when I lose my virginity, I want it to be special. So that's why there were candles,
and I had
a soundtrack because we knew it was going to happen. We planned on it happening, even though it was on the bottom bunk of a twin bunk bed in my boyfriend's parents'
cute.
Attic.
That's cute.
We used Vaseline because we didn't know you weren't supposed to.
Oh, man. I can hear it now.
It's like that South Park episode. Here's what it might have sounded like fucking your grandmother.
My friend used to have this thing. He used to call it stirring the macaroni.
Oh, yes. That is actually a dead. Okay, that. Yeah, I've heard that one. I heard it one other time, and when I heard it, I was like, yep, that's it. Put it away. No one else even try.
Yep,
that's exactly.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Which he should have patented that shit, because I've heard somebody say that. He was saying this shit back when 95, 94, yeah, like, oh, man.
What were you for?
I stirred that bitch macaroni, man. Like, are you serious? Yeah, men talk
like,
shit.
I've never, you know what's funny is I've never heard someone describe sex in that way, but also have it be so ack. You know what I mean? Like, that, like audibly. Like, I've never heard someone describe sex and have it, like, audibly be like, oh, yeah, that's exactly.
Close your eyes. Get a big old pot of Velveeta.
Get
mom's wooden spoon.
Ah!
In 5 minutes, we're going to need a cigarette. Okay. All right. So, tangent.
All right, no, you're fine. Okay. So you sprouted the seeds of pragmatism after your son was born.
Yeah, well, sprouted after my good friend died and calcified after my son was born. And by then, I was just you don't know what the fuck will happen. You got to have your shit together. This world is crazy.
So is that like the stuff you say to your son all the time, especially now that he's at the age where he's like doing all this?
No, because he's, once again, he's autistic. So like a lot of our kids,
I wasn't sure where he was.
I tell people like he, some of it's severe and some of it's whatever. But I tell people like talking to a lot of autistic people is kind of like talking to somebody with a stroke. They process what you say. It's just
probably super smart.
Yeah, they just can't regurgitate it all
gotcha.
The time. You know
gotcha.
What I mean?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
They know what you're saying. You know, it's like talking to Stephen Hawking. You know, he's
right.
not gonna talk back to you.
Right. But
he gets what you're saying. And then he's growing and he's growing up in that paradigm. So he's learning through that filter.
Mm-hmm.
So his approach to life is a little different. But it's so weird what's universal that all kids do. The shows he watches, him loving playing his Wii, loving pizza, like just all this shit that you can't teach that kids inherently like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so all of that is universal, but it's so much with it that's not. That's just like, fuck this disease, dude. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Or I don't know if you can call it disease, but whatever
right.
the fuck. Fuck
condition,
this. Yeah,
yeah,
fuck this thing. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Do you have other kids?
Yeah, I have two other kids. I was a little history. 22 when I had Antonio, and then I didn't want to have any more kids because I was already young. And then after I found out a couple years later with his autism, I really didn't want to have any more kids because I was just like, I can't do this. And me and his mom, we were working it out, you know what I mean? Young, you know, parents. And it was still not bad then, you know? And then I never forget, it was because he's 16 now. And then my middle child, she's 8. She's going to be 9 in a month. So they've got that gap of about 7 years. I never forget, I was at work. I was a cook at the time. And I was coming from work. You know how you do the checkup call or whatever. How you doing? I'm on my way home, honey, blah, blah, blah. And so I'm like, I call. She's on the phone. First thing she says really quick, I love you. I was like, what? She's like, I love you. I was like, what happened? She's like, I love you. She just kept saying it. And I'm like, what the fuck happened? And she was like, I'm not telling you till you get home. And I was just like, and then I get home. And then she told me she was pregnant again. And she was on the pill.
Was this your youngest?
This was my second.
Okay, gotcha.
Because I didn't want to have another child after Antonio. And then I found out she was pregnant. And I'm like, how'd this happen? You know, I've just been coming in you. But she was on the pill. So, you know, balls in your court, honey.
Right.
So, she later confessed, she was like, she didn't want Antonio to be the only child. I was like, you could have kind of got me in on that one.
Yeah, because that's kind of your business.
Yeah, and then my youngest, Amaya, she's 7. She just turned 7. So that was both of us being careless. But by the time Amaya was born, our relationship was over. And we were doing the whole stay together for the kids.
Okay.
So we were together for probably about another almost a... Well, no, right after Maya was born, she moved out. Okay. And we still were, you know, that kind of, you know, I hate you, let's, you know, bang. But
that was
the beginning of the end. It was over after that. So, yeah, we had a decent amount of time together. But I always tell people, too, I'm not here to, like, shit on her, you know what I mean? She's a good mom. I always tell people, no matter what it is, kids or no kids, you are not who you are at 20 as you are when you're 30.
No way.
And so, and that's where we were. We were coming out of our 20s, and she's like 2.5 years younger than me. But yeah, by the early, it's like, no, we're going to different places. I had, my religion was completely gone by then, and she's like a Bible thumper for sure. Because that was the other thing with autism. Okay. I was all like, ooh, let's do the ABA, this applied behavioral analysis, this way of teaching autistic kids. And I was all into that, and gluten-free diets, and just all this new age shit before these other motherfuckers were doing it.
Yeah.
And she was all on the pray away the gay thing. He's not gay, but you know, she was on the pray away. Yeah. I'll pray. Jesus. And so that sucked.
That would be really frustrating.
And just feel it. And that's when you learn a lot being in relationships. And that's when I learned that even because we got along, but if you have different like philosophical ways of looking at the world and your ideology is different, then I don't care how much fucking love it is or fucking it is. It's like it's not. So that was it. Yeah. I feel like I was going down a dark road there.
No, believe me. Oh, God, no. This is actually the most fun I've had on here in a couple weeks. Because I feel like the last couple weeks I haven't been drinking because I've been sick. And then I'm like, oh, God, it's awkward. Oh, no. I start overthinking it because I'm like not under the influence.
Yeah, I told you. I have diarrhea of the mouth. I could do this for 12 hours.
Yeah, those are the types of guests we enjoy.
Yeah.
I'm happy for that.
It's helpful.
So again, kind of talking about like, do you instill on your two youngest, your daughters, like a lot of the whole like, well, now you got to think about this and like be aware that this is going
to happen. Well, no. I'll give them like little gems here and there, but a lot of that shit goes in one ear and not the other. What I learned a while ago, kids don't do what you say do. They do what you do.
Okay.
So you kind of just got to be that whatever example.
Literally lead by example.
And too, like I remember it was a few Christmases ago, like I got them their children's Bible and stuff. I don't put my atheism and all that shit on them.
So did your girlfriend, is she religious or do you guys just
No, she wasn't very religious, but she was raised Catholic, kind of like I was raised Baptist. And I think she's still into something, some type of thing, because that was my thing. I didn't want to, because I came with heavy handed with my shit and I didn't want to be influencing her. And I feel like I did a little bit, but then I feel like part of it was just her natural evolution as a person.
Yeah.
But I don't put that on my kids. I want them to read the Bible. Like I read this fact one time. They said atheists actually know more about the Bible than a lot of
people
who are religious. Because once you read it, you're like, oh, these are a bunch of Egyptian and Sumerian texts mixed with some Greek mythology and a bunch of old school Jewish folklore. And then you do that. You give it to Constantine, Council of Nicaea. We'll take this book. We don't want that one. Switch that name around. And bam, shit, we got a Bible.
But see, that's the thing about pragmatists is they don't take it at face value. They want to dig in. They want to learn more about it. That's the thing. I've actually always been fascinated with theology just from the perspective of like historical context and like what shit actually went down and how it affected what got put into the Bible and all that. So
I find myself now actually going back to a lot of that stuff. Like I really get into like old history and shit like that. And I'm getting into a lot of like old Sumerian stuff and like the Egyptian Book of the Dead. And it's fascinating reading about a lot of this stuff and cities back then that actually did exist. So there is a lot of truth in there, but I like approaching it through that level. You know what I mean? Of how it really happened and how people broke it down. And then when you see overlapping themes of like, you know, the tale of Gilgamesh, which is really the tale of Noah's Ark and all this other shit. Like when you start learning that, I learned not to be completely dismissive of all the stuff in the Bible because it just comes from other stuff. You know what I mean?
That I find fascinating.
Like, actually
learning, like,
Yeah.
And I would rather approach it like in a historical context.
Exactly. And then because we see other Bibles like the Ethiopian Bible or even in the Quran, they have books that are not in the King James book. Like they have a Book of Mary and then they have a Book of Enoch and all these other books that were just as important as all the other ones. But once again, when they had the whole, Council of Nicaea back with Constantine, and then it was another one.
This is the most educational this podcast has ever been.
Yeah. Oh, dude.
Please don't stop.
I get weed and I just give me a book for the History Channel. I'm a sponge.
I just write jokes with a lot of puns in them when I'm high. That's how I came up with my visual AIDS joke. Wouldn't it be funny if you could see HIV on someone and call it visual AIDS? And then my boyfriend and I both go,
You know, if you're small enough, you probably could.
Yeah, see? There you go.
There you go. Yeah.
No, sorry, what were you going to say? We were just talking about...
I don't know. Speaking of weed, I forgot.
What was it? Ah, fuck if I know.
Speaking of weed, that thought's gone.
Here's a fun fact. I've only done stand-up comedy Stone Sober twice.
Twice. I just learned... That's what I was going to say. Yeah. I just learned how to do it. Slightly inebriated, or I've just learned how to write. And even when yesterday I got a couple out. This is my writing book here on the table I brought. But
one of those old school comp books that are like black and white.
One of these I got.
Static on the outside.
My first two were actually diaries.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's like, you know how you get diaries for Christmas and you throw them in a closet and haven't used it in like 10
Mine
years.
Mine have locks on them. Mine little padlocks on them.
Yeah, I learned years ago, never read a woman's diary.
Yeah, don't do that.
But I digress. I just learned how to somewhat do that inebriated because my brain.
Could you not do it before?
Oh, no.
You did sober before? When
yeah,
you
I had really? To be so, as sober as fuck.
Really?
Like, sober as fuck. Like, that first year of me doing stand up, like, the day that I would go on stage, like, I had a whole thing. I would wake up, I had to do my coffee. I was still working out at the time, so I would work out, I would meditate. It was on my way to the venue, like, if my girl was driving, which I prefer her to drive most of the time because I didn't want to spend thought on steering, and I've like turned the fucking radio off, and I had a whole routine, and it would be like super like just a knot in my chest for the whole day until I got on stage, and then it was because she used to say that she was like, man, like when you get off stage, I can see your energy is completely different because I'm like, oh, thank God it's over. It's like you're forever. I used to tell people it was like losing my virginity every single time. Like every time, it's this amazing experience, and I'm just terrified to Coolio. No, it's this amazing experience, but I'm just like, please don't fuck up, please don't fuck up, please don't fuck up. You know what I mean? But I finally got to a point to where I'm getting better. But I salute you because I've seen you a lot of times, and I can never tell, and you're always funny, and I can't do that.
I usually do a shot or two. So here's the thing. I usually do a shot or two because I shake really bad. And even when I've had like one or two shots, I still shake. But I did it at O'Toole's the first time, which was a terrible idea because that's just a tough room.
Yeah.
I could be wasted and still feel bad about myself up
there. You could be Dave Chappelle and bombing that.
Yeah. Room. Oh, yeah. That's a great point. Oh, my God. That's so true. So true. And the other was this last weekend at the roast battle was because I was sick, so I did not have a drop of alcohol.
They want to help with your wits. The thing was,
I had people record it and I looked at it and just, like, to your point, I can't tell the difference between when I've had a drink and, like, when I was sober doing comedy the other night. So, but the one thing I was going to say is I've never, ever, ever done it high because I can't finish a sentence. Yeah. Like, when I'm too high, like, I'll just be like, what were we? And then, like, if I tried to tell jokes like that, oh, my God, like, that would be
And the concept of time is completely different.
Oh, my God. Yeah, somebody lights you and you're like, has it been an hour?
Yeah. It's like when you're approaching the intersection and you're letting like a million people turn left before you. And the sober person in the car is like, what the fuck are you doing? And like, I don't want to hit him, man. And they're like a thousand yards away.
Like, we've been here 20 minutes.
Yeah. So I salute you. I can. Well, part of it too, though, for me, because I'm a fucking weed hit.
Okay.
And I'm a bartender and I drink like probably way more than this shit.
Yeah.
So like I'm around it all the time, and it's to the point where I have, I don't even know what you do, but when you're at work, like I've had jobs where once I started smoking before work, I could not be high there. You know what I mean? So I didn't want that to be like that with comedy where I had to be high on stage. I remember watching an interview with Sam Jackson and he was talking about that, like back in his junkie days, how he was always drunk or high when he would do plays and all types of other stuff. And it took him a long time to be able to act sober. And I never wanted that because I've had so many shitty jobs to where I'm like, I can't even walk in here
sober.
Punch somebody in the face.
But being in the restaurant industry or like, you know, bartending, that is
just like the
gateway to alcoholism. Like, I was in that industry before and it was like you got off your shift, you went and sat at the bar and they would just pour you like, it wasn't even in like an actual person glass. It was in like a Tupperware container, and they would just like pour in a bunch of Christmas ale, and they're like, "Here you go," or whatever you want to drink, because you would just sit around and drink after, and it was already late, so there was no one up or like anything to do.
You
didn't want to go home because you wanted to salvage your night. Like that's just how it happens.
All your friends do it, so they're all on the same schedule. Like you said, you get off super late, and even like restaurant jobs I've had where I'm not doing 2:30, but you're still getting out, you know. 11, 12, 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
And then my club jobs and my other ones where you're getting out like 3, 4, 5. And then it's like, so you need something to wind down because you can't just hit the pillow. It's everywhere. And then like when you know bartenders and you go to bars. So I'd like bars that like know me, like I'll sit down and like they immediately just pour me Jameson. And like you said, it's like
a tumbler.
4 inches or 3 inches probably of just straight. Yeah. Whiskey, you know what I mean? And I always take breaks every year, and I'm supposed to take a break now. I like to like clean up before my birthday and get all slim and trim, and I still got it. So, and I remember doing that last year and the year before, but I still met my friend out at the bar, and I'm like, I'll just drink water here. So that was another big step, too, being able to be there and not indulge in it.
Yeah.
But still getting there, as soon as I sit down, hey, Johnson, I'm like, stop pouring. Like, you have to tell the bartender to stop pouring because it was just, that's my routine all the time. And, like, this bar used to go to in Valley View because I lived, like, off of Warner in Cleveland before I moved to Lakewood. My girlfriend, I come home just fucked up, and she's like, how much did you drink? And I'm like, all I had was 2 shots in the beer. She's like, 2 shots there is half a bottle. And I was like, yeah, I know.
So was that like the whole like, I can't get in the habit of it, was that just self-imposed?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? And where do you think that discipline comes from? Not everybody's got that.
Just knowing my fuck ups. Yeah. Like
so you've had things where you were
I have a GED. I tried college but I didn't finish that. I've had, you know, failed relationships. I know my limitations. I know what I like. I made myself like, John, take a shower and fucking get to this podcast early because I know I didn't want to be the late, you know, black guest. Like, oh, here we go.
Our first person of color guest is late. I forgot to tell him this was on Eastern traffic. Time, yeah, and not you CPT. Know?
So certain shit, I kind of have to save myself from myself. You know what I mean? Because I know how I am. Even with my kids, like for the longest, my mom didn't really have the biggest relationship with my kids. But I didn't want to be that guy. I knew so many dudes who would get their kids and then go to their mom's house and drop them off there. And I didn't want to be that dude who, like, my mom is, like, co-parenting with me. So I a lot of shit I do is more, once again, it's just more self-preservation. It's not even out of being a virtuous good person. I just know I'm such a fucking lazy ass that I have to get in front of myself. Or if I don't, I'm a fucking shit up.
This is so me. Like, just all the things you're describing, because that's a lot of, again, the reason why I want to be more... like less logic, because I am lazy. I'm really fucking lazy, and I show
think
up late
all
to
comics
all the
are.
Time. Oh my god! And the thing is, like, they're obviously varying degrees, because there are those of us that are employed, and then there are others that cannot stay employed for the life of them. But it's true. Like, I know inherently, like, we wouldn't be sitting here having a conversation around a table right now, because I wouldn't have put any of this together, because I would have never reached out to Pete. So, like none of this would be happening if it weren't for the fact that there's a piece of me that, like, loathes that inherently lazy part of myself and just pushes myself to do the opposite every single day.
Like, yeah. Before I started stand-up, I heard this this saying, and I applied it to the first time that I did stand-up. First time I did it was at Funny Stop. That's where I broke my cherry at their comedy amateur thing. But I heard this saying. It was throw your hat over the fence. You know what I mean? And I try to do that with big shit. Is the old throw your hat over
you
the fence.
You gotta go get it. It's on the other
side. Yes, you have to put yourself in a position where you have to do something, where that becomes the catalyst. You know what I mean? Because if it's on your own steam, like your own will, like it's not happening. I'm like, my will is like a fucking wee brownie 2 hours in on the couch. I'm like, okay, I'm about to. That's how I got to be 36 and
this.
Still like, yeah, yeah. Like, so... after a while, you start being like, oh, shit. Because I was talking to this girl I used to bartend with, and I was like, it's weird how, like, you know, like, being in your 30s, like, everything after your 2000, to me, I consider to be modern. Like, when people talk about,
too.
Like, old school. This one girl, she was just talking about old school rap. I miss old school rap like Ludacris. And I was like, oh, that's not really old school. But so everything after 2000, I consider to be modern. But I'm like, it's 2018. And then I started doing the math. And I'm like, well, fuck, man. In 18 more years, I'm going to be in my late 50s. So I was like, I kind of got to get on the ball with some of this shit right now. You know what I mean? So I got this time thing in my head that's just tick.
That's what
tick,
I liked about
tick.
Having Cindy here a couple weeks ago, because she just started comedy a year ago and she's in her late 50s.
Yeah,
I think
she said. 56.
And she was like, and I got time. And this, and like, she's not worried about it. And so it makes me feel, because when I started, I was 34. What we were talking about is, like, so many of the comics are, like, in their early 20s. And
oh, my God.
Shit, man. They have
when
all
you
the
see
time.
People who are so great, like, Marcello is amazing. Jasmine's amazing. I'm like, by the
Chad
time
Weaver.
You... Yeah, I'm like, by the time you guys are our age, you're going to run the fucking country.
Exactly, because they've had the time to do it.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
But it does make me feel... And that's the thing, too. I've been looking at, like, just people who write for shows and just, you know, recently, like... graduated from like IO or Second City, and like some of them are my parents' age, and it's like they're making it happen even though like they're my parents' age. And
well, that's the beauty of comedy, like you said, you can get into it. Like Joy Behar got in late, Rodney Dangerfield got in late, you know what I mean? Like, and like one of my favorites, George Carlin, like you can push this up into the grave. And it's not like boxing or even being a musician in a sense to where time isn't on your side. I think if you got something good, you can use it to your advantage. Those are all the best people to me. Like the specials who got better. George Carlin's specials have gotten better. Bill Burr's specials have gotten better. Although his last one was just okay. But still, like Chappelle better, like Chris Rock, or although his one before the last one was just okay. But most people in comedy who are great, they get better, and you so rarely see that in any type
other.
Of art. Like I was saying, like with Jay-Z and his first album, there's so many people who are artists, like that first one is like, you get it all out and it's all on the
so
table. And then after that, like you're scraping
you
up the scraps. You
and
use.
It's harder to come up with material because you don't live the life that most people do.
Right.
But all you can do is just, I mean, like in comedy, the older you get, it's just like the more stories, the more perspective you gain. I mean,
life experience.
It's not like you're your ability is going to like diminish. I don't know.
No, I agree with you.
No, you're saying, I get you, but because your life experiences lend into you to your craft. It's you know what I mean? I did hear this one comic say though, you have to success is a bit of the enemy because the way he phrased it, he says you live in a limousine.
Yeah, a bubble.
It's like you're on the airplane and then the limo picks you up and then you get out of the limo and then you're in the back of the club and then you go on stage and then you get off stage and you're in the limo and you're back to, so you're never interacting. Right. And it's the interaction with people.
Exactly.
Like even like your Uber ride and my being scared to knock on a door, we both got a 5-minute set just out of that alone, you know what I mean?
We just brought the Uber ride up, which means we can talk about it because I just wanted to get into the swing of the show before. All right, so I'm going to start the story because it starts with me and then I'm going to let Gigi pick up where she joins us on this Uber ride. So every week, because here on the default setting, we like to engage in mind-altering substances from time to time. We responsibly choose and endorse rideshare programs such as Lyft and Uber. I happened to call an Uber this evening because it was 2 minutes away versus Lyft's 8 minutes away. Sorry, Lyft. And if you want to pay me, I'll switch the numbers around for you. The guy showed up, and it was one of those where I kind of had to faux chase him down the street because like I was waving my phone, but he didn't realize that it was me. He was there to pick up and caught him and told him to turn right to go to the Shoreway, Cleveland Shoreway. And he asked me where we were going. And I was like, well, you know, we're going to the address that's on
going to my house.
The Uber app. And at that point, we're going to go pick up Jeej. And we pick up Jeej. And, so we're on our way to pick up Jeej. And, sorry, I'm high, in case you couldn't tell. And I was like, well, we're going to West 95th. And he's like, well, are we going to have time to get to the airport? Now, keep in mind, I was just going to pick up Jeej and then come to the studio. There was no plan to go to the airport. And I said, no, we don't need to go to the airport. We need to go near like West 130th. And he's like, well, isn't that Brook Park? And I was like, sure. And he And he was like, oh, okay, well, that's near the airport. And I was like, okay. And he's like, actually, when I saw you wanted to go that direction, I just put in secrets. And I didn't say anything because I wasn't sure what I thought I'd heard. And he responded again, secrets. And I think it was his punchline. Now that he kept saying it as a comedian, I'm like, I think he was like, that was his, is this mic on?
Did you tell your audience what secrets is?
So, well, no, because then the third thing he says is, are you familiar? Secrets? The Gentleman's Club? You know? Secrets? And I was like, no, I don't. I don't know what that is. And I immediately began frantically texting Gigi because I'm like, holy shit, our Uber driver is fucking insane. And she's like, what's happening? And I was like, well, he's driving down the street with his seatbelt off while it's dinging the entire way down the Shoreway. And as it's dinging, something else I failed to mention is that every window in his van was open.
In his Jeep.
In his Jeep, my bad. His Jeep was open.
How do you have a Jeep?
Ladies and gentlemen, it is 18 degrees outside right now.
Whoa, wait, why?
That's the best part. It gets worse from here.
Were
they broke?
No.
He just had him down. And then we're driving down the Shoreway doing 50 miles an hour in 18 degree weather. Ding, ding.
I said I would have duck and rolled.
So she's like, just get out. Like, just, we'll call another Uber. I'm like,
ditch him.
It's probably fine. Like, let's just get there. So we get to Gigi's house and Gigi gets in the car.
I get in. She tells me, you know, I had to scrape shit off the back seat just so you could sit down. I'm like, okay, this is messy.
Like boxes of Dr.
I get
Pepper.
Into his Jeep, which I'm first
boxes?
Of all,
yeah.
Just by seeing the crazy on his face, I'm like, how do you have a Jeep? I'm pissed and I'm jealous because I wanted a Jeep. And I get into the car, ding, which the door was ding, like kind of really weird, like swung open. I get in there. It is like I'm sitting in a meat locker on four wheels. He just starts zooming around. He turns right on.
You guys were the meat, by the way.
We were the meat. Oh, and I knew it. We got the meat. Yeah, like we literally, I was like, oh, this isn't good. Nothing good's going to come from this ride. And so I'm like texting Jess in the back seat. I'm like, I literally can't stop looking. I can't stop looking at every item in his car. Why does he still have tags on his glove box? How did he get this? Why does he not have the heat on? Oh my God, all the windows are almost frozen over.
So the windows were back up at this point. And I was like, okay, that's fine. The windows are back up. And then all of a sudden we realized the windows are so fogged because he doesn't have the heat on that no one can see out of the window. Like no one, no heat.
I thought it was a smell issue. No.
And it was like, it was grossly sterile. There was like in the front passenger seat, every little nook and cranny that could possibly be filled with something. There was like old VHS tapes, a notebook, tissues coming out of the like heat vent.
Electrical tape, rope.
I thought they inspected your car when you signed up for ride apps.
Apparently not.
So he said the thing about secrets, you know, the gentleman's club. And I immediately grabbed my phone and look at the Uber app to see, I was like, what is this man's rating?
I got the wrong car.
It was 4.62. And I was like, I don't know what's happening right now. Like, I have no
idea. Out of five. Wow.
There's no way.
And
I never Uber, sorry.
And the whole time, like, I'm thinking, because he kept asking me, like, well, where are we going? Aren't we going to the airport? I'm like,
he's got this.
Jump in the wrong Uber, because finally I was like, doesn't your phone tell you what the directions are? And then Gigi and I were trying to have a conversation on the way over here, and every time we start to talk, he would just be like, where am I going, which way do
he
I turn?
He had this jacked up little Android phone that was like, it looked like a serial killer's phone straight up, and he just kept going,
I've got that phone.
No, that is high tech.
Smaller than that
compared to what he's got working that. And he was just like, it was like turn right on this street, and he'd be like,
Am I going straight?
Am I turning? And we were like, he doesn't know how to drive.
Let's get politically correct. Was this dude white?
Yeah.
Indian? Oh, white dude?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
He was like our age.
Did he play music in the car?
No.
It was dead silent.
I'm trying to like.
Every time I looked up, he was staring at me in the rearview mirror, and I was like, do not memorize his face. You will never see this face again. And if you do, I will be killing you.
Fat, weird comic guy. No. Skinny, weird guy.
Skinny, kind of like a beard, like. That was like real.
The more we
out.
Talk about it, I'm like, oh my God, he was a serial killer.
Why was he trying to get to the airport, though? I mean,
to go to Columbia to.
Were there weird moths flying around?
We were
like
almost sex trafficked, basically.
Oh my God. That was God. So weird.
Like, I told my roommate before I left, I was like, so if I randomly text you just like a random blurb, that means like help, like call the cops. This
like
Uber is trying to kill
right
us
now. Like if you just see like a bunch of asterisks and like
Yeah, I was like, I'm literally just gonna go like this and do a little tap dance with my fingers because I'm gonna be so scared I won't be able to type.
Oh God, yeah. Yet another reason I don't do Uber.
And then he goes, the windows are so fogged, and he's like, okay, I'm turning left. Rolls down his driver's window. I'm sitting right behind him, just like. And at this point, I was like, this is so messed up.
That's why the windows were down.
I was like, this is a joke. This guy is a clown. I was like going like this, holding in my left. I was just like covering my mouth, and my whole body was convulsing because I'm like, this is what comedy sketches are made of. Yeah. Like,
how long was this ride? Like, well, I'm sure
long.
It felt like
yeah.
a year. But
yeah, I was like 45 minutes, but it was probably like 12 minutes.
Like Lois and Clark, are we in California yet?
I don't understand. And we get out of the Uber. She like bursts out laughing. She's like, please give him 1 star. I was like, well, yes.
I said, please save everyone else in the world and give him 1 star. Yeah. I'm not about giving bad ratings.
But still,
ratings.
That's only going to take his rating down to like 4.61 now. And people are still going to be like, oh, I'm sure this guy's fine. I'm sure it's all fine.
Oh, it's so
that
scary.
Is so creepy. Yeah.
What was his name?
I don't remember. I think
any ladies
Uber
out there in Cleveland
you,
tonight?
I mean,
and
Uber shows you a history of what
Theodore Bundy.
If you get a
John
Jeep
Wayne Gacy
of a guy who looks like he just drove straight up from like West Virginia, and his name is
your trips. His name. Oh, it's loading. His name. Oh no, it only tells me the.
Robert.
Oh, Mark. Remember
Mac.
His name's Mac.
Do not get in his Jeep.
It. I gave him 1 star, and he is an insane person. Here, can we look at this picture? Oh, yep, there it is. There it is. That's Mac.
Oh, man, that looks like the look somebody would look down at you when you're, like, in the basement, and you know you're not getting out of the basement.
Exactly, lovely bones,
and
yeah.
It puts the lotion on its skin. I got your dog, mister. Oh, God.
There's a better picture. Is that him, Gigi? Oh. If a sketch artist showed you that
those
picture.
Glasses. Oh. That looks like a crime sketch right there.
Oh, wait, it's 4.36.
Was this him?
It's 4.36. Okay, that makes a lot more sense. But still, he shouldn't even have like anything over a 4.
I mean, he didn't know how to drive. He didn't know what lanes were. I felt like I was back living in Mexico, and I was like, he was in the left lane, now he's in the right lane.
I bet you my
that is creepy.
My one that I gave him is probably why he has a 4.36 instead of a 4.63 now. So
I mean,
I did that.
I'm putting him on the police blotter later.
I did my civic duty.
What if he's at home, like, judging himself, like, crying, like, I'm trying to be better. I'm such an introvert.
He needs to learn. He needs to not have that profession. I'm sorry.
What if he's on a podcast right now, like, I just had these two bitches in my car. I just had to move out of my house, so I got
what
all
kind
this.
Of podcast are they? I got all Who this... listens to that podcast?
You'll never believe this. Man. I was just about to kill these two white bitches.
They weren't
even considered.
And I
tried freezing them to
enough.
Death, but they jumped out of my car. I don't know what happened. Oh, that really sucks.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I felt like the one was a fast runner. You're right.
Like, but it's like my favorite murderer, but literally. Like, everybody, like
making
like American
a murder.
Idol, but they like vote on who their favorite peer.
It's so scary.
I like how we were all scared approaching this house in our own way.
For our own reasons. Yeah, we all have like this fear of being murdered in one way or the other when we were getting out.
Oh, thank God.
If I can just
be in one piece.
God, I loved talking to you, John Armstrong. You were so much fun to talk to. We have to wrap this up because we're already way over time. But
sorry.
Which, no, I actually like when we go over time because that means we're actually having a good time.
Real good.
So do you have anything as far as social media or shows coming up that are about a month from now that you would like to promote, Mr. John Armstrong?
Social media, John Armstrong Comedy on Instagram, John Armstrong on Facebook.
There's only one of those. Only one.
Only one?
One John Armstrong on Facebook.
Really? Wow. Good.
Sarcasm doesn't travel over podcasts as well.
John Smith on Facebook, ladies
John
and gentlemen.
Smith, yes.
Oh, duh. Yes.
John Doe.
Okay. I'm sorry. I've been smoking weed, too. In the next month, I got a show, Spider Show, coming up the 28th of March.
And then at the end
of this month, I think I'm going to be able to do a set at the showcase at the Improv on Wednesday.
Cool.
That'll be the first time ever doing that
Very
that
cool.
place. So shout out to John Bruton. He kind of plugged me for that one.
Aww.
So yeah. And just you'll always see me around any of these rooms bouncing around Lakewood or Cleveland, just getting comedy in, supporting other comics.
You've been busting ass the last couple months.
Yupper, trying to get this thing going. Yeah, I love this. I like the fraternity of it. I like I know you, but I don't know you, and I just met you, but like a lot of our wheels are kind of in the same spot. So I was telling somebody, it's like this fraternity, and like part of it, I just like being in that fraternity.
Right.
Like we're on the island of misfit toys.
Oh my God! Yes, even among misfits, we're misfits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a water gun that squirts jelly.
I'm a train with square wheels.
Yeah, I love that.
I love that movie.
I love that.
I'm a boat that is afloat. We're all misfits.
Oh God!
God, I've watched that.
That's
movie
gonna
way
be the picture.
Times.
Oh, last thing. Speaking of kids and trying to get kids to do things, so I tried to get my kids to sit out and watch Rudolph because I love that movie.
That's my favorite.
They thought it was the dumbest shit. They could not get through it.
Damn,
they're like,
you children.
They were raised on CGI,
back
so stop motion to them is I might as well have drew some shit and put it in a
they're
flip
like,
book.
What are we looking like, at right now?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you so. Children
That's so
don't
sad.
Know how good you are.
Yeah, so yeah.
All right. There you go. Geej, where can we find you on the social media?
I am on Instagram at ggchick, ggchick.
I am at EpicFaul, EpicFaul, on Twitter and Instagram, and you can find me literally every Sunday at 7 p.m. at the Avenue Tap House in Lakewood, which you'll always probably, not always probably, you'll probably often see Mr. John Armstrong there at least once a month, because that's how often I like to have him there. I want to thank OK Pants, at OK Pants for doing our logo, at OK Pants on probably everything that has a at symbol. Pete Milk, Milky Way Recordings, for producing ye old podcast here. Above Below Entertainment and Lousy Weather Media Network. We usually do a sound effect. So, but I think for this one, because we
had stirred macaroni.
Nightmare.
Sorry.
Oh, I don't even know how to make that sound.
I love the same time.
Macaroni and stereo.
You gotta have a juicy cheese.
It's a cacophony of people stirring macaroni.
Oh, God.
Okay, love you. Bye.